and welcome to the Health and Happiness Show. You're on Untangled FM and I'm Edwina Griffin. Often we focus on our physical and mental bodies for achieving health and happiness. But how is it our spiritual body communicates to us? And how can we access and use that in our daily life? Do you have a daily or weekly routine for your spiritual practice? Our next guest is a psychic development and metaphysics teacher who's one of Australia's greatest psychic mediums. She was a finalist on the first series of Australia's TV show, The One, and a psychic coach for the second series. She's a show host for Psychic TV Oz and a regular guest on Sydney Radio 91.3 FM. She's a clairvoyant and medical intuitive, and her passion is to help people reconnect to their inherent intuitive ability. I'd like to welcome my friend and psychic medium, Amanda Rossetti. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you, Edwina. How are you going?
Very well, thank you. Very excited to have you on the show.
I'm very excited to be part of the show. Thank you so much.
Great. Now let's get into it. In terms of intuition, this is your area of passion. When you refer to intuition, what do you mean exactly by that? What is intuition?
Well, your intuition is an added sense. You know, we have the gift of sight, we have the gift of hearing, you know, and the gift of intuition is the ability to sense outside of yourself, to sense your environment without using your sight, without using touch, without using, you know, smell and sound. You're actually able to still sense your environment and also to be connected to your soul, to be connected to your energetic body and the other aspects of self that unfortunately we take for granted so much these days. So being intuitive is really using that additional sense to intuit what's around you, to feel what's going on around you and within you.
Right. So you were mentioning, you know, the different bodies that we have, because often, you know, people focus on the physical body, but you're mentioning the energetic body, the spiritual body. How many bodies are there?
Well, there's actually, you've got your physical body, and just outside of that, you actually have your etheric body. Now, your etheric body connects, it's very much like a second skin in a way. It's very closely connected with the physical body, and it allows you to, you know, to very much replicate what's happening in the physical. So if you have an ailment in the body, it will reflect immediately on the etheric body. Now, just out of the etheric, you actually have your emotional body, and from that you have your mental body, and then you have your spiritual body. So there are actually quite a few layers there of this energetic body that makes up the overall aura. And even though we can't see it, it is there. You can feel it, and each layer connects in, and I guess ultimately it's part. Well, it is. It's part of the physical body in its own way, just the different layers of it.
Wow, interesting. And you're a medical intuitive. So, which body do you work in, and how does that work exactly? Can you explain for those of us who don't have that gift how it is you work on that, or is that a separate gift? Is that working with the bodies, or
Well, my medical intuitive ability, I actually discovered that I had that when I was 12 years old. I wasn't aware that anything like that actually existed, but medical intuition is the ability to detect ailments in other people and then to give that intuition about what may be causing the problem or what that person needs to do to fix that problem. So for me, I'm also empathic, very, very empathic, so I will feel the ailment in the other person, and then I will medically intuit where it's coming from, what's causing it. So for me, I'll connect not only to the person, but I connect to a source, so I connect, you know, to spirit, and they will actually bring through information about how that person may have injured themselves or how that ailment came to be. And it's not just a physical issue, you know, there's emotions that will play a part in that person's healing, and so there's lots of information that will come through, and then from there the person's able to, you know, either source out the correct GP. You know, I'm not a doctor, so I don't claim to, you know, be able to fix that problem, but I am able to, you know, very often give enough information that they can go to the right person that can help them. So often the person will present with, you know, for example, if they've, you know, injured their neck, okay, and they may have seen different people at chiropractor, but it just may not be working. Well, they may get some other information from Spirit about, you know, something else that they need to go and get checked with that. So it may end up be, you know, they may be feeling it in their neck, but it may be coming from somewhere else. And medical intuition is the ability to see deeper into that ailment and see where the problem is coming from. So then they can fix it.
Oh, wow, amazing. Now, not all of us were born with that amazing gift. Is it, like, does everyone have some level of sort of intuition and psychic ability from your experience?
No, how, definitely.
How is it that we all come in on what levels? And yeah, I guess that's the first question.
Well, I've been saying to people for many years that we are all born with the gift of intuition. And we are. It's our God-given right. We're born with this gift just as we're born with the gift of sight and so on. And the problem is that as we grow, you know, society and, you know, different aspects of our life tend to sort of dismiss intuition as, you know, nothing more than airy-fairy nonsense. And so we often dismiss that and not see the benefits of it. And, you know, one of the main things that I really drum into people as much as I can is, you know, intuition is part of who you are. And being intuitive, being, you know, people assume that because you're psychic, because you're intuitive, that you must wear flowing purple garments and practically float across the floor. Well, I'm sorry, but it doesn't work that way. That's not what makes you intuitive. Intuition is so much more than an appearance. Intuition is, you know, your ability to see life, your life, in a way that you're able to make decisions about your life with complete clarity. So many people, they block their intuition through their, you know, through their upbringing or social circumstances or cultural, you know, all kinds of things that may play a part in it. But there's nothing to fear from being intuitive, and it can only benefit you. And I mean, it can benefit you whether you are, you know, an adult or a child, whether you're a business person, whether you are a parent. There's so many benefits to using your intuition. We all have it. Every single one of us have intuition. But we've, unfortunately, you know, we have blocked it a lot. So we have to re-tap into it. You know, we have to start accessing that part of ourselves. And that takes practice, and it takes patience, and it takes time. But you tend to find that the more you allow yourself to be open to it, you start to see the massive benefits of being intuitive.
Right. And when you say, you know, we're all born with intuition and, you know, we block it. So what are the main obstacles? Is it purely our belief systems that's blocking it, or are there other factors that come in?
It's really a lot of things, mostly belief systems, and often they're belief systems that were inflicted upon us. So it could be religious or cultural or all kinds of things. We tend to sort of, you know, shun it, you know, and just go, oh no, I can't delve into that, or, you know, it's nonsense. I mean, if you see a child who's saying, oh, you know, I see this, or I experience this, or you know, a child may often tell a parent, I don't want to go near that person. And their parent will say, don't be rude, give so-and-so a hug and a kiss, hello, you know, don't be rude. Instantly dismissing that child's intuition that says, I don't really want to go near that person. Do you know what I mean? What the child is bringing up is being shunned, you know, and that's just one example. I mean, so many different things. I mean, if a child all of a sudden is picking up that there is danger ahead, whether it's in a car or, you know, walking, you know, to the shopping center with the parent or whatever the case, if the child speaks up and the parent's mind is going, well, I have to get there, the parent will say to them, that's nonsense, don't be silly. You know, and unfortunately that was a culture for many of us growing up, that we were told, don't be silly, you know, and pretty much told, you know, children were silent seen but not heard, as they say. And that allowed a lot of us to suppress what was our intuition speaking. Now, that's not really the culture today. A lot of parents are listening. A lot of parents these days listen and allow their children to open up and to speak and you know, have that intuition coming to the forefront, which is a great thing. But in our generation and the generation before and the generation before that, it really wasn't allowed. So we suppressed it. We just went, oh, well, mum says it's silly or dad says it's silly. It must be. Or mum or dad says it's not really there, so it mustn't be there. And you just block it. You stop talking about it. You stop experiencing it. And you start second-guessing yourself. Now, how many of us out there second-guess ourselves all the time and then kick ourselves, you know, for making the wrong choice? It's so common.
Mm.
And that's because we're suppressing our intuition. So many people say to me, I was going to do that, and I didn't. And now I wish I had.
Yeah. Yeah. So is there any hope for us, given that many of us have been brought up with that conditioning? What are some of the examples of ways we can improve? You know, what is the hope for us to improve that and regain it?
It's your inherent gift. It was given to you. You know, you were born with it. Just because you've suppressed it doesn't mean that it's gone for good. You can access your intuition. There is hope. And for the way that when I'm teaching psychic development, intuitive development, the one thing that all of my students across the board, the one piece of homework that is drummed into them week after week is they must meditate. Meditation is the key to it. Now, people say to me, how does that possibly help me? Well, in order to be intuitive, you have to learn to quieten the mind. We spend so much time in our head. You know, we're always thinking about, oh, I've got to pay that bill and I have to get to work at this time. I didn't do this at work and I've got to pick little Johnny up from preschool. And, you know, your mind's busy. It's chaotic in there. Mm. And how are you possibly supposed to listen to your gut? How are you supposed to listen to that gut instinct and your intuition if your mind's constantly busy? So you have to learn to quieten it. Well, the key to quietening your mind is meditation, and that is a practice. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. And some of my students, you know, when they first start, they'll say, I've been meditating, you know, for 2 weeks and I'm not getting anything out of it. And I say to them, let go. The key to it, let go. Submit to it. Allow yourself to be present in that moment. And the moment you just allow, you tend to find that your mind will actually let go. And you'll actually start to have quiet. And when that happens, then your intuition can step forward and you'll start to have clarity.
Yeah, no, I've heard in terms of meditation that the expectation, like having expectation around meditation of what it's going to do, what it's going to create, can itself almost counteract or cross out the benefits of meditation if you're sort of putting an outcome-based focus on it. Would you agree with that? Or?
Oh, yes.
Because it's almost like the mind becomes waiting for the end, so that it's not really, not really letting go.
If you do put that expectation on it, you tend to be trying to control it. And that's not what meditation is about. Meditation's about allowing and being present and literally being, you know, allowing your mind to become quiet. Now, if you're trying to control the outcome, your mind isn't quiet. It's still trying to control everything. So that's definitely not going to work. I do find that when people start to allow it, then they find that time just completely disappears. And before you know it, you know, 50 minutes will have passed and you think it's only 15, but it's actually 50 minutes you've been meditating. You're so at peace and so calm that there's no restriction to it. So whereas when you're really focusing, you're like, oh, goodness, you know, okay, now I need to stop and, you know, or this is going to happen or I'm going to get this out of it. And you're not getting anything out of it. You're really not. So, yeah, you've got to let it go.
Hmm. So in terms of improving intuitive abilities, you know, there's so many forms of meditation, and then there's guided visualizations, and then there's, you know, actual meditations where you're trying to connect with guides, and there's so many options there. Is there a particular form that is more beneficial for developing psychic abilities and intuitive skills, or, you know, what's your opinion on meditation itself? I mean, there are so many choices for people.
Yeah, I think when you're learning to meditate, when you're first starting out, I think the best thing is getting a well-recommended guided meditation, and one, you know, that literally is just teaching the basics. Now, whether that is just preferably something a bit more visual, you know, so it might say, you know, it might be taking you on a journey to a forest or something like this, but as it talks you through it, it's teaching you just to have one train of thought. You know, when I'm teaching class, all my students are put through guided meditations each week, and that allows them the chance to just go and listen to my words and that one train of thought. So they're not listening to the chaos in their head. They've got one voice and one message. Now, once they learn that, and that's the same with guided meditation, on a CD or, you know, on your iPods or whatever, you're listening to just that train of thought. So once you develop that and you get used to that, then put on your own relaxing music. Get, you know, chat to people and see what they recommend. There's, you know, go to your local metaphysics shop and have a chat to the people and see what they play, you know, what they use for their meditations, because there's always some beautiful music out there, you know, whether it's some sort of singing bowls or you know, just nature sounds. But you put it on and just sit and breathe, and that is the key in the initial part, is focusing on your breath, because for you to focus again on one thing, just one, and if that's just your breath coming in and out, and if you keep focusing on that, eventually you'll even let that go and you'll become present just with the breath moving in and out. A lot of people do meditations where you stare into the flame and you just look into the flame for a period of time, and you're focusing again just on the flame until it disappears. There's varied ways, and I think people have to dabble in it a little bit, you know, try a few things. I mean, you may get a meditation CD and just go, oh, I really, this person's voice is driving me nuts. Well, fair enough, don't do that one. But if the more that you sort of dabble in, you'll find one. I've been to different meditation groups myself, where although I put people through meditation and I do meditation on my own, it's very beneficial to be able to meditate with other people. And that's because of the energy that's moving through the group at that point. It will raise your vibration, and it really has an impact on helping you to go deeper into the meditation. So for a period of time there, I actually joined a meditation group that I was going to regularly, and I loved it. It was like my little holiday every week for, you know, 45 minutes or so. I was on my little meditation vacation. And it was great. It was fantastic. So
I totally agree. Group meditation's amazing. And also, you know, the studies they've done on that, in terms of not only is it amazing to be part of, but the benefits, you know, reduce crime and violence in areas that have meditation groups, and there's so much research about that, so it's kind of not only a personal but a collective benefit from my understanding.
What actually amazes me is that people don't realise the benefits of meditation. And if for those of you out there listening, I mean, you look at your daily life and the chaos, and that's it, you know, you all live in chaos. How many of you get up, you run around dropping children off, rushing to work, or, you know, all kinds of things, you know, it's busy, lives are busy, and that leads to so much stress. You know, we live in very stressful times, you know, everything's speeding up so fast, and we're trying to grab hold of something stable and just so we can, you know, maintain our sanity, and it's crazy busy. Well, that stress that's coming from that, you know, we're anxious, and, you know, we're not always coping very well because it's a lot to take on. Well, the way to help with that is to be able to just calm down, just to be calm, whether it's for a few minutes or, you know, 30 or 40 minutes, to be calm. Well, what's the best way to do that? To meditate. Now, people say to me, yeah, but, you know, when I finish the meditation, I go back to stress. Well, you learn from meditation, and one of the key things you learn from meditation is how to, on a, you know, second notice, be able to bring those techniques into daily life so that you can be calm again. But before I actually did my spiritual work on a full-time basis, I worked in a very hectic housing organisation. You know, we worked with people who were, you know, struggling with life. There was, you know, a lot of people who were having a lot of difficulties, and they'd come through our door and they'd be crying and stressed, and we'd be trying to, you know, repair houses, and it was so much. I was team leader in community housing. It was a very hectic time for me. And my meditation skills were my savior on many, many times where, you know, especially if somebody came in that was quite aggressive, you know, because they were stressed, they were angry. And if it was really stressing me, I would just focus on my breath and literally just breathe and calm my core down, calm it down enough that then I could speak logically with that person instead of letting my emotions go crazy and you know, let my stresses impact them. I was able to speak rationally and sort problems and make things a bit more simpler and easier. So my meditational skills were hugely beneficial back then, just as they are with my children. You know, I have three children and, you know, life's chaotic with three children. So being able to communicate with them when they've come home from school and they're stressed is, you know, it's those meditation skills again that are able to calm me and keep me centered, which then reflects into their life. And it also helps intuition come forward. And when the intuition
A great tip, sorry, that you were just saying. I just want to, you know, just the bringing yourself back to the breath in the middle of a busy work day. It's so simple yet so powerful and effective. And that's a great tip for people when you are busy to literally come back. And I guess as you're saying, I just want to reinforce this because I think it's a really important point, that the benefit having done meditation is that when you go into that breath and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just repeating what I think you're saying. Going into that breath, you go into the zone of relaxation a lot faster. Is that what you mean?
Exactly.
In terms of
exactly.
If you've meditated? Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's because you've practiced it so much. And the more that you're practicing it, it becomes a common daily practice. It just does. Just say you're in, you know, you're driving somewhere and it's banked up traffic and you're running late. Now, we've all been in that predicament. We're running late. We need to get somewhere, you know, and we're thinking, I'm never going to get there. Everything's going wrong. You know, you've woken up, you've kicked your toe, and it just seems to be a downhill spiral. Well, I know for me, if I get up out of bed and I've kicked my toe, the first thing I do is go, thank you for that. I know I'm awake now. Great. Now it's going to be a great day. I don't go into the mentality of, no, this is going to be terrible. I will not allow myself to do that. I instantly go, it's going to be great. You know, I'm awake, I'm alive, it's fantastic, and then I'll start singing. Now I find that by doing that, I'm already changing my mood to be better. So, and then if I do get stuck then in the traffic, you know, and it's terrible and I'm starting to stress, I'll stop and I'll breathe and calm myself, and then I'll think of all the positives around that. So I guess I allow my whole being to become centered and go, well, it's not going to change anything, you know, getting stressed about it. I'll get there eventually. You know, and I do. I've managed to calm myself because that stress that you feel when your chest is tightening and, you know, and you're just feeling the absolute panic, it's not good for your physical body. It's making you sick. And I don't want to live like that. So, and I don't think any of us want to live like that. We want to be able to, you know, take care of ourselves and get the most out of this, you know, physical vessel that we've been blessed with. We don't want to, destroy it with stress.
When you just, I just wanted to pick up on something you just mentioned that you, you sing, when you've, you know, when you stub your toe and then you said you start singing. What about music and the voice in terms of, one, a connection to spirit and two, is it a pathway towards also accessing the intuitive abilities and psychic abilities, or where do you see music and sound in that?
Oh, music and sound, that for me, I know how important they are with my meditation alone, you know, to, because I will feel the vibration of the music when I meditate, so I'll play something very soothing, but I will feel it. I go to sleep every night listening to music, and the reason that I do that is because of the gentle vibration of the music as I'm entering into the dream time, you know, as I'm going into that sleep zone, my mind is, you know, my pineal gland is getting very activated as I'm going into sleep, and I want to make sure that I'm entering into that in a peaceful way. So music is very, very beneficial with our intuition, because, and we feel it, and it's very cleansing. I do, you know, house clearings as well, you know, clearing the vibration of homes. You know, people, when they're stressed, their energetic body leaves behind a residue that... that residual energy that can be quite negative at times, and you know, just as we leave behind very positive energy as well. You know, if you've walked into a room, and I'm sure everyone out there at some point has walked into a room and gone, oh, this something's just not right in here. You know, this feels a bit icky, a bit uncomfortable, where, you know, there've been, maybe somebody's just been arguing in there or something. And you've all felt that. Well, you know, at times I'll go through and I'll clear houses. Well, that's something I also teach in my classes, is how to clear the energy of a house. And one day my beautiful students and I, we went into a home to practice to clear the house, and one of my gorgeous students brought along a drum, and another one brought along her singing bells. Now, I'm telling you, with the, you know, vibration of the drum going through the house, and with the you know, the singing bells, and also we had a singing bowl. And this, the way the music came through, the vibration shifted in this house, it was beautiful. Now, the couple who lived there have said to me that since then they've had, you know, beautiful energy in the house. Everything's been going fantastic for them. And, you know, and they said it was just... once they walked back in, it felt so light and so lovely. And, you know, I'm convinced that not only because we did the energetic clearing of the place, but we lifted that vibration through the music, you know, through the singing bells and bowls and through the drumming. So it was, yeah, it was a beautiful experience.
Wow, wow. That's amazing. And when you talk about clearing houses as well, you know, often sage is used for clearing, and what's the significance with that? Is that the activating the sense of smell with the sage, or is it the burn in the smoke, or how does that play into the,
well,
into that model?
It's the smoke itself. I mean, white sage, and I use a lot of white sage for clearing. White sage has been used by Native American Indians, you know, since forever and a day. And basically by passing the sage smoke through the item through it, it does tend to disperse that negative energy. It tends to clear it and get rid of it. And you only have to give it a test run to feel that difference. You know, it is it's very, very powerful. And it's also the ceremony of it, to actually move through with the intention. Now, intention plays a very big role, you know, to actually go out there with your intention and say, you know, I want any negativity cleared. I'm asking for only positivity and wonderful things for this environment, for this person, for anything. You know, if you think anything negatively, it's leaving that impact. You know, the more positive that you think, the more positive that you feel, it leaves that vibration. Now, that's a beautiful thing, to want to leave goodness somewhere and to feel goodness from somebody else. So if, you know, the intent to clear the energy of the house is you're also asking for, as it's clearing, for blessings to come through to that area. So it's not just the smoke and the sage, it's the intention behind it.
Mm-hmm. So intention, powerful thing. When we talk about, you know, our desire to become more intuitive, our desire to create what we want in our life, and again, you know, connecting that with our heart space and bringing that all together in intention. Is there a routine, a daily routine you do or that you recommend to your students for setting up an intention for a day, or to bring that into our day-to-day life, that connection to spirit, that connection to our heart, to create what we want, you know? I think often we mindlessly kind of go through our day. What's your teaching on that, or approach for that?
I guess for me personally, my main thing that I do every single day is have gratitude. gratitude for the simplest of things. And I do believe that's the key. When I wake up in the morning, you know, I'm grateful that I'm actually in this body, that I'm actually experiencing. And yes, when I stub my toe, I sing, but I generally wake up with a song in my head, you know, and I'll hum as I, you know, head off during the day. And for me, as I said, the simplest little things, and I do say this to people, have gratitude. When you are driving along and the sun's setting, you know, just take a moment to look at it and, you know, flash throughout the day of the positives that happen. Now, there may have been some things that weren't so positive. Don't dwell on them. You know, be grateful that you had the experience of it and that that experience is behind you and it's finished. But mostly focus on the good things, the chance to chat to people, the chance to be part of somebody's life. Maybe they shared a story with you that, you know, opened their heart and healed them for that moment. Be grateful that they trusted you to tell you that. Be grateful for the water that you're drinking, that we have beautiful clean water. You know, be grateful for your family that love you and, you know, the chance to be part of their life. When you're eating your food, taste it. Literally taste that food and know that it's nourishing you, you know. It's part of you now. And it, you know, it was grown for that ability to be able to nourish you and heal you. It's just having gratitude in these tiny little things. Because when we're grateful for that, other good things are able to come into our life. You know, they're able to be part of our life because we're opening ourselves up to goodness. And when somebody does wrong by you, you know, as hard as it is, sometimes, I mean, you know, you can look at them and go, oh, I really right now I'm angry with you. But also look at them and go, I feel sorry for you that you are so angry right now or that you've gone out of your way to hurt me or to hurt somebody else. And, you know, you can then choose how you respond to that. Do you want to get revenge, which is only going to eat away at you, or do you want to, you know, step out of the situation, say, I choose not to let you hurt me, but I choose also not to bring harm to you or anyone else. So it's making choices and being and looking at that situation saying, well, I'm grateful for the chance to I've learned from that, I've grown from that, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to choose how I react to this. So, yeah, always back to gratitude.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's very true. Interesting, that theme is coming through on lots of levels. Obviously a big message, that. In terms of people developing their intuitive abilities, is there a process that it goes through? You know, you're saying meditation is the starting point for all. Does it evolve sort of from one to the other, like in terms of whether it's intuitive abilities or accessing our guides or mediumship or all the various psychic abilities people can be gifted with. Do they run in a certain process? Is there a sort of, you know, a tick point on the way through, so to speak, or how does it play out, or is there no rule?
I think the main thing that a lot of people actually ask me as they're, you know, contemplating doing, you know, a spiritual development, you know, a psychic development course, an intuitive development course, the one thing that they'll say is, but, you know, I don't want to be a psychic reader, you know, I don't want to go to festivals and read cards. How is this going to actually help me, you know? And I say to them, you don't actually have to become a reader. You don't have to become a psychic medium. You don't have to become a healer. You know, you don't have to do that. You can still be, you know, a police officer, or you can still be a school teacher, or, you know, you can still be the community nurse. Whatever it is that you're doing, you can stay there with that. But developing your intuition will benefit your daily life. It will help you. And you will still go through the same processes. And those processes are that, yes, you start with meditation, and then you do start to learn to communicate with yourself. So you'll start to communicate with your higher consciousness, and you'll start to get guidance from that higher consciousness. And the more that you're opening to it, you will start getting a lot of communication from your spirit guides. Now, I do a lot of work with spirit guides, and I see them as very essential in helping us. Now, for those of you out there who are listening going, well, what is a spirit guide? Our spirit guides are like our own personal angels. You know, they're our spirit helpers. Now, many of you may have actually heard of the phrase that we are a soul living a human existence, you know, where we're not a human living a spiritual existence. You know, it's the other way around. Now, because of that, we tend to find that we need helpers here from spirit. You know, we're living this human existence, we're experiencing it, but we're souls first and foremost. So we need earthly helpers. Yeah, we have, you know, our parents and our family and our teachers, but we also need spirit helpers. So that's where our spirit guides step in. And our spirit guides have worked with us from before we come to be till we pass back over. They're with us our whole journey. And spirit guides tend to give you that guidance. So as you start to develop intuitively, you find that your spirit guides will communicate with you more. They'll start to show you where to go next and help you on this journey as you evolve. Now, it's not always, you know, peace, love among beings. You know, it's not one of those things where it's you know, blissful and wonderful. It can be quite, you know, emotional at times, because you start to really feel what's happening around you. You start to feel what's happening with other people, and you start to gain an understanding more of life and of people. Now, if you've walked around technically blindfolded for most of your life, and all of a sudden you're starting to tap into those around you, and you start to realize that, you know, a loved one close to you is actually quite depressed, because you're becoming aware of your surroundings, you start to see that. So that can be a bit confronting, because you haven't allowed yourself to really acknowledge that before. So there is that process, but because you're opening up and you've got your spirit guides helping you, and your higher consciousness is giving you that guidance as well, it does allow you to deal with those situations. It allows you to listen and to see what you could do to help, or what you can do to move through this on your own level, as well as, you know, for that person.
And, you know, I often hear people sort of say that you're never given anything you can't handle in terms of our spirit and our ability to cope with whatever's thrown at us. But in terms of when people do, you know, when we do open up more to these new realms and open to our higher self and our guides, and are there any risks associated with that for people that are just, you know, for this new world, so to speak?
Not really so much risks. I do recommend that anyone who does want to get into intuitive development, that you source out a teacher with a fine reputation. A lot of people say that they don't actually believe in protection, psychic protection, energetic protection. And that's something that I've been quite, I've been quite passionate about telling people that, you know, you should protect your energy. And I've had people say, well, there's nothing to fear. And as I say to them, the reason that I tell my students to do energetic protection as they're developing is because they're actually starting to feel their environment on such a level. And as I said, it can be very confronting. Now, if it's so confronting, you don't want to be taking on too much at once, because as you develop your intuition, your vibration, your energetic bodies become quite quite sensitive, okay? Because, as I said, they're going to feel their environment. They're going to feel what's going on around them, and they need to, I guess, soften a little bit and become a little bit more susceptible in order to do that. So you need to know how to protect your vibration from taking on too much, because you don't want to be overrun with it. You don't want it to be too much to take on. So I do suggest that people source out a, you know, well-recommended intuitive development teacher, somebody that does teach them these important aspects of, you know, how to handle situations when they present that they're not used to, okay? And also yourself. You're going to start to feel you. And for a lot of us, that's the first time in a long time that we've really felt us. And I had this conversation with somebody not too long ago about feeling you and appreciating you. How many of you out there, like, really can look at your feet and say, they are my feet and I love them. This is my leg and I love my leg. This is my elbow and I love my elbow. These are my facial features and I love them. You know, you have to become content within your body. And as you develop intuitively, you become aware of who you are. So you have to learn to appreciate that. And that's a big thing. I mean, you know, we take care of ourselves with nutrition. You know, we try and eat better. We buy our organic fruits and veg and, you know, we become vegan and all these other things. You know, we do our fitness work and try to take care of our body. But we have to also learn to love every aspect of that body. You know, it's our vessel. It's the reason that we're able to live in this existence, that we're able to bring through our intuition to walk this path.
And in terms of people's intuitive abilities and psychic abilities, again, often I hear of people having been through a trauma, and I notice on your website you refer to, unfortunately, having losses in your past, which have actually contributed to great jumps in your abilities psychically and intuitively. Why is that the case? And is that true for all people?
It's different for everyone. I know in my case, I went through a lot of loss over a period of time where quite a few different family members I'd lost. And, you know, I'm talking, you know, in the vicinity of about 10 people that I knew I lost in the period of about 6 years. So I felt like I was forever losing somebody close to me. And for me, the icing on the cake was the loss of my sister. And it was very, very hard on me when that first happened. And I'd actually just shut off my intuition. I'd lost a cousin that I was extremely close to through cancer. And when he passed away, I was very angry because I thought I couldn't fix him. What good were my abilities if I couldn't fix him? Now, for me, my abilities I've had since a very small child that I can remember. So as far back as being, you know, 3-4 years old, I can remember having my gifts. So to get into my late teens and be losing all these family members and realizing that I couldn't save them, it really was hard on me. So I shut off and said, you know, this is silly. If I can't save those that I love most, what's the point? And I did. I shut off for probably 12 months. I refused to feel anything and to be part of it. And what was happening was I was also shutting off my heart. I was shutting off my heart to love and to life. And it was a very difficult time. And once I actually allowed myself to open up again, and it took a lot of courage to do so, but once I did, my intuition came back tenfold. And for me, before they passed, I was very clairvoyant, medical intuitive, and I was connecting to spirit guides, but my mediumship ability hadn't reached its potential. It was there, but it hadn't reached its potential, and after my family died, I'd shut off. Well, once I opened back up, it's like the floodgates opened and it just really activated. I can't really give an exact answer why. I think because I'd hurt so much that then I surrendered to it. I allowed myself to be open to wanting to receive love again and to feel. And once I did that, it came in and my mediumship side really just activated on a massive scale. So I have had people say to me, do I have to go through hell as such? You know, do I have to lose everyone in order to become a medium? And I've gone, no, you don't have to do that. Some of us, that's our path, but that's not everyone's path, so don't stress. I know many brilliant mediums who do not need to, who haven't lost, you know, abundant family members. That was, you know, just my journey. But it was always my faith and my intuition that allowed me to get through that time. unfortunately, 6 months ago, my father passed away. And when he passed away, leading up to his passing, it was my mediumship ability, it was my intuition and my connection to spirit that helped that journey. That really, it was my faith, my unwavering faith that got me through it. Got both of us through it leading up to his passing. And after, you know, Dad went home to heaven, you know, it was that faith and knowing that I was supported that got me through the weeks and months that followed. So I, you know, if anyone out there is sort of thinking, oh, you know, is it really a good thing to be intuitive? Oh, it is. It's a sight to see things, to see life like you've never seen it. And For me, unfortunately, when I was being pregnant, I actually lose my gifts. They actually have shut down and I haven't been able to do anything. And it is the worst thing, I'm telling you. I hate it. I hate not being able to see and know and feel. It is just awful. And it really, really upsets me. So the moment that, you know, my baby's, you know, been born and the intuition comes back, everyone who I know has heard about it. I've got my gift back. I can never do it again. it's such a blessing. It really is.
It's great that you have that perception, though, like you've had the perspective of both, you know. In that from those people who are, as you're saying, considering, you know, exploring this area more, the difference in life from, yes, you are perhaps the more extreme with a gift, but as you say, we all have it to some degree and that extra sort of depth that perhaps it gives day to day.
Oh, yes, most definitely, most definitely.
Now, I see you also in your, you know, you do workshops on intuitive healing and you have, you mentioned a few other sort of approaches in, I'm not sure what they all are, but psychometry and remote viewing and energy channeling. Are they all parts of, and, you know, connecting with spirit guides, are they part of the path towards increasing intuitive abilities or are they other areas again?
Yeah, they're all different tools. I mean, psychometry is the ability to hold an item in your hand and read it. Now, as I mentioned before, we've got our energetic body. Now, if I'm reading somebody, I'm actually tapping into those energetic bodies, you know, your etheric and your emotional, mental and spiritual layers, and I'm having a little bit of feel in there and just, okay, what's going on? How is this person emotionally? What's their mental, you know, state like? Is their mind racing at 100 miles an hour? Or are they, you know, a bit off with the fairies? You know, like what's happening in there? I'll feel into that. Well, when you do psychometry, you're taking an item that belongs to that person that is sat in that vibration, that's sat in that energetic body for long enough that it holds some of that residue. And as you hold it, you're reading the person via their item. And it holds, I mean, all your jewelry, you know, your watches, your rings, anything that's on your physical being for at least a week is holding a pretty strong vibration of you. So the moment a sensitive holds it, they're picking up aspects of you. Now, it's the same as if, you know, if just say, you know, there's always, you know, grandpa who'll sit in his chair, you know, and he has his one chair that he likes to sit in, you know, for hours on end. Or grandma likes to do the same. Well, they sit there for so long, their energetic residue is all over that chair. So if a sensitive then goes and sits in the chair, they're going to be picking up a lot of that, you know. And psychometry is like that, except you're holding it in your hand and you're reading the item based on that. And I mean, people don't realize the impact of energy and just how effective it is to somebody who's sensitive. And quite a funny story that I'll share with you is being a medical intuitive and being a empath. I am very sensitive to my environment. And one day I sat on a bench with a dear friend of mine, an astrologer friend who is well aware of my gift. And as we sat down on the bench, I start arching my back and you know, I'm sort of rubbing my back and, you know, sort of popping out my you know, torso. And she's like, what's wrong? And I said, oh, I've got terrible heartburn all of a sudden. My back's aching. And she said, oh, where's that come from? I said, I don't know. I sat down and I can just feel it. I said, it's so uncomfortable. You know, I'm sitting in this really awkward position. And she turned and looked behind me, and she nudged me and said, I think you need to look behind you. Well, I turned around, and there was a woman sitting behind me who was about 8 months pregnant. And she was sitting there rubbing her back with, in exactly the same position as me. She was sitting back to back with me, and I hadn't realized that I was picking up on her. Well, that's what it's like for a sensitive. You don't have to touch that person. You just have to be in their energy, or you just have to hold an item that belongs to them to read them. So, yeah. It was kind of moving moment. The moment I saw it, I could have kicked myself.
That's interesting, actually, because I recently was house minding a friend's place, and it was actually for her father had passed, and I was I was in the house for a week or so, and I actually found exactly what you were talking about. I found myself really, really angry, and then I started getting really depressed, and I couldn't work it out because I'd been in a great space. And anyway, it's very similar to your story, is that I rang this friend and said, look, was there something going on? As it turned out, yeah, towards the end, her this family member had been very angry and very depressed, and I'd taken it on. I found myself snapping at someone that normally just wasn't in my personality. I literally took on a totally different person for a day. It was actually quite terrifying. But very interesting. That's Yeah, it's really interesting to be aware of, actually, because it was something I hadn't considered. It took me a few days to work out what was going on. But yeah, that's really powerful. And what do you recommend for clearing that?
Well, for clearing that is white sage. Get some white sage and smudge the place. You know, you light the white sage, you let it sort of smoulder, and you pass the smoke through the area, and it will clear that residue. You know, it depends on the item as to how much you have to sort of do that. But, I mean, with psychometry, it will hold your vibration. If somebody is reading an item through psychometry, it actually can be a bit tricky if the items belong to somebody else beforehand. I've had people hand me a ring to do psychometry with, and the ring was their grandmother's, and I'm reading grandma, and I'm giving them all this information. They go, no, no, no. And then all of a sudden I go, oh, well, the ring was my grandmother's, and I go, right, does all this relate to grandma? And I go, yeah, it does. And I say, okay, well, her imprint is slightly stronger than yours on the ring. So basically when you're doing psychometry, you're going to pick up, you know, all kinds of stuff. You might pick up about their, you know, how many children they had or their life. I know when I was on the one, I did psychometry as one of the challenges. And the gentleman that I was reading, and I didn't know who I was reading at the time, I just had the item in my hand. It was a little cross and a crystal. And as I held it, I could hear the trains. I could hear them, cha-chung, cha-chung. I could hear them so loudly. And I mentioned that. It turns out he worked for the rail company, you know, so he was hearing trains all the time. So little things like this you will pick up on, you know, through psychometry. Mm. Remote viewing is different again. It's the ability to view something from a distance. So there have been government facilities that have, you know, had remote viewing groups for many, many years. They don't, as far as I'm aware of, any longer, but for, I think, about 60 years they had secret remote viewing groups that were actually working with the government, you know, and, you know, viewing things from a distance, you know. They're able to see an item and give full details about it, you know, in other countries. And, oh, it's amazing what remote viewing can do. There's, you know, you can predict things through remote viewing. It's more of a modern-day thing. It hasn't been around quite that long, in comparison to most other psychic, you know, gifts or tools. But it is an extension. There's so much out there, you know. I say to people, when you get into this, it's like a can of worms. They just keep on coming out. There's so much, you know. There's so many forms of healing. Yeah. And then you've got crystals and tarot cards. Yeah. And it's endless.
So when people are trying to develop their own intuition, are there a couple of things that you would recommend in terms of a weekly routine, like, you know, do they get tarots, do they get crystals, do they, what's a sort of quick tips that you could suggest for people?
Quick tips, apart from, you know, definitely, meditation, and I say at least 15 minutes a day, three times a week. Now, you don't have to, you know, sit there and with your legs crossed doing the om. You know, if you want to do that, fantastic, but it doesn't have to be that. I've meditated in a car park for, you know, 20, 30 minutes just because, you know, I needed to do it, and I've literally just parked the car in a car park, sat there and meditated. It doesn't have to be flash. You don't have to have music on. You can. It's probably far easier. But at least 15 minutes, three times a week minimum. Do work out, but morning or night, because if you start meditating at night, sometimes you're tired, but then you're just not off to sleep. So sometimes mornings are better for people. Also, get yourself a journal. Get an exercise book, and then one side make it your dream journal, the other side make it your meditation journal. When you come out of your meditation, write down every single thing you remember. Whether it's one thing or 20 things, write it down. Same with your dreams. Write them down. Now, the reason for that is it will help you to learn what your language is, what your language, your intuitive language is. So as your intuition is speaking to you, you'll start to understand the symbols. You'll start to understand the patterns. So at first it might not mean much, but just keep writing it down, because then you'll go, oh, I dreamt something like that. And when you go back to your feet, you'll reread the symbols and go, ah, that makes sense. Or you'll look at your meditation and go, oh, I get that now. That makes sense to me. So you've got to learn to understand your intuition. So they're the main things, is your dream meditation journal and your meditating three times a week. And also just that gratitude. Yeah. Just the gratitude, having gratitude for everything. Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. I haven't heard the diary in terms of recognizing patterns. That sounds really like a really great way to approach it. I'm going to start doing that this week. So now if people wanting to have a reading with you or follow one of your psychic development workshops, how can they find you? Is it best via your website or...?
Yeah, just go to my website, which is www.amandarossetti.com, and that's AmandaRossetty.com. And from there they can email me and book in. Now, I do one-on-one readings face-to-face. I do Skype readings, phone readings, all kinds of things. So a lot of my clients aren't, you know, based here in Sydney. They're also over from the UK and United States. So it does allow that, you know, Skype's such a blessing these days. You know, they can have a chat to me over the internet and actually get their reading done that way. So and all information's on my website.
Okay. Well, I'll also have the link for your website on the Facebook page and on untangledfm.com. So thanks so much for being with us, Amanda, and some great tips, and everyone can find you online. And next week on the show, I'll be speaking with someone who was a pioneer in teaching the techniques for finding happiness in Australia. So we'll be here same time next week, 8 a.m. Australian time, 11 p.m. UK, and 4 p.m. Pacific Standard. See you next week. Thanks.